Hey there, and welcome to the Analytics Neat podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bruno. Analytics Neat is a weekly podcast that debuts on Mondays, exploring all things media, marketing, and analytics. I'd also urge you to continue the conversation with me directly, either through BillBruno.com or via Twitter, at Bill Bruno, using the hashtag Analytics Neat. Before we jump in and talk a little bit about DIDs and what those are, I wanted to share a user experience story that I had from this past weekend. I found myself at the Four Winds Casino up in Michigan, and they had installed this past weekend for the first time ever a digital version of many games, so things like roulette and blackjack, where you could sit and place your bets at your own little console. But that console interacted with a live game that you could either watch in front of you, as there was a dealer up in front of you playing both roulette and blackjack that you could play along with, or you could actually connect via camera to other tables around the casino to play the game live there as well, which was really interesting for a couple of reasons. I mean, one, I think from a user experience standpoint, it was something that allows the casinos to have more people playing games, right? So you can, instead of cramming a bunch of people in at a table or having a limit, you could have them sitting at these machines playing the same games, and as a result, probably donating more money to the casino as they lose those games or, you know, what have you. But it was a really cool experience because it built your own personal console. It was something that the casino could advertise towards you on if they knew who you were, if you were using your player's card as an example. And it allowed you to kind of jump around and have a play sort of a variety of games, which to me felt smart for a casino who's trying to capture the attention of people and get you to gamble as much money as possible. And obviously we all go there with the hopes of winning. The house, though, inevitably always wins eventually. And this was a really unique experience that I had never seen before in a casino. So I thought I'd share that with you guys because I love when I see things that show that type of enhancement to a user experience. The staff was oddly very thrilled about the launch of it. They were, you know, coming up, explaining how to use it. They were all very excited, but I couldn't help but think in the back of my head that, you know, long term, what this means is probably casinos will not have as many dealers or the needs for as many dealers, as once again, it looks like the robots are continuing to win that battle. I also wanted to send a shout out and a thank you to those of you that have donated to my sexy mustache that I'm rocking this entire month, especially to the anonymous donor who donated $500. Obviously, I don't know who that person is. That's the nature of being anonymous, but very sincere, heartfelt thanks if you happen to be a listener of this podcast. And if you do find yourself wanting to donate to my cause, and as I continue to grow out this lovely nose neighbor, the link will be in the show notes for you to be able to do that. And again, thank you so much for those of you that have. I really appreciate the support. And with that, let's jump into the meat of today's topic. If I asked you to write down all the vendors, apps, and systems that have all or some of your personal information, what percentage of them do you actually think you'd be able to list? You know, so in the grand scheme of things, if you listed all the ones you could think of, what percentage of that is the total list? I've joked in the past that when Skynet inevitably happens, that I'd be the easiest to find. I mean, I've provided my data all over the place. As a guy who believes in personalization, it's everywhere. You know, I want, as a data guy, you know, having lived and breathed analytics for the better part of the last 15 plus years, I've made my data readily available and typically only revoke it if I find that the company is not doing a good job with it, or, you know, you find out that the company has sacrificed your data or lost your data or been hacked and caused you some inconvenience, similar to the British Airways example that I mentioned last week. The problem that this highlights, though, right, is that this fragmented and in many cases obscured setup is why we have things like that British Airways issue or the Facebook issues that we've talked about in the archives. You know, our data is everywhere. Every time you interact with a new brand, a new service, a new game, a new app, you know, it presents you with an opportunity to either create an account or link it with an existing account. And as a result, you know, it becomes near impossible to keep track of all the places where you've either signed up or provided your information. And I know from my personal standpoint, sometimes I even forget of things that I've signed up for, whether it's a sweepstakes to win a trip somewhere or whatever the case may be, until I get an email from a place and I'm sitting there going, I have no idea who these people are, and inevitably end up unsubscribing because I forget why or how I ended up interacting with that brand in the first place. And I think we'd all agree that instead, this whole process around personal data should be something that we as individuals own and that we can control and keep track of in a more centralized manner, right? I think that in the grand scheme of things would be a more perfect situation where you can almost toggle and say, okay, show me everywhere that I've shared my information, and you can go through and just turn it off, right? Similar to unsubscribing to the emails as you receive them. So this is where Microsoft has stepped in, and a colleague of mine shared a white paper with me that I'll leave in the show notes in case you find that interesting to kind of dive in. But Microsoft has definitely entered as one of the major players here, taking a stand on this front, and they're trying to incorporate how people interact with blockchain, various ledgers, and you know, apps and subscription services, so on and so forth. And they're taking all of this and building it into an open-sourced, decentralized identity, or DID, implementation that runs on top of existing public chains as a public layer 2 network designed for world-scale use. So simply put, it's something that's open source and independent that consumers like us could use to store all of our information and then pick and choose where and what and how much we share as we interact with all the different platforms out there. And it's based on the concept of blockchain and ledgers and actually makes use of those in some of the features. And it even outlines sort of how you can append additional information as you get it to your decentralized identity to then continue to use that in all of the different interactions. And Microsoft is partnering with two organizations as they start to build out this infrastructure. One is the Decentralized Identity Foundation, or DIF, and the second is the W3C Credentials Community Group. And as I mentioned, I'll cover off on some of the high level here just to make you aware of what this DID infrastructure is and what it looks like and what it could accomplish. But again, there's the link in the show notes to the white paper that I mentioned earlier that has a lot of technical detail, some really good diagrams to help explain sort of the technical interactions and some of the security protocols that Microsoft is putting in place or planning on putting in place as they roll this out to the marketplace. But essentially, the system is made up of 7 key components, with the main component being a W3C decentralized identifier, or a DID. These are IDs that we as users can create, own, and control independently of any organization or government. And they're global unique identifiers to us that are composed of JSON documents that contain public key material, authentication descriptors, and service endpoints. So basically, this entire system is built around the thought process of compiling a unique identifier for each individual that uses an infrastructure and metadata to compile and build a profile that we own, control, and choose where it goes. And Microsoft will offer sort of a wallet-like app. So for those of you that have an iPhone and maybe use the wallet app for Apple Pay or your plane tickets like I do or so on and so forth, it'll be a similar app like that that can act as a user agent for us to manage our DIDs and all of the associated data that's linked to that. And in part of this system, they'll also offer things like DID attestations. And as I mentioned, there's 7 components. So attestations are one of those with the IDs being number 2. There's 5 other pieces to this format, but these DID signed attestations are based on standard formats and protocols, and they enable identity owners, so the users, to be able to generate material, to present information about them, and to verify that it is in fact their information and that it is something that belongs to them. And this forms a very interesting basis of trust between users and the systems that they're using. And an example in the white paper that you'll see is the case of someone recently graduating college who can take a digital version of their diploma and then add that to their DID and begin to share that with potential employers as they're going through the hiring process, or revoke that access once they've accepted a job to all the other companies that maybe they chose not to work with. In many ways, this approach that Microsoft's trying to build is to really supersede things like email addresses or social network IDs. We've talked about in the archives, you know, with Facebook, how you can use your Facebook ID to then log into several other systems, right? Same thing you could do with a Google ID. But the risk there, right, is that the email address might become defunct. You might delete that email address. You might not use it anymore, so on and so forth. And so as an input to digital identity, it's not a high enough node in the tree, so to speak, right? And that's where Microsoft foresees this DID infrastructure to be different and to be more valuable, because it can be user-generated and self-owned, and it's a global identifier that then you could append things like your email address or your social network ID to. So it escalates up the tree to a degree where it will never get deleted in theory, right? This is who you are in digital systems. And as a result, you can append all kinds of other IDs and information to it as you build different profiles and interact across the chain with other businesses or other apps or other games. But in theory, this would build something that's a bit more permanent as well. So probably similar to things like a social security number back in the day, right? And where people use that for everything, whereas now it's something that people protect because it's the core of your identity, right? And Microsoft has been working on this approach for the past 18 months, and they intend on starting to put pieces into the public marketplace in the coming months. I think for me, there's sort of two challenges that I see immediately. I think one is on the development front. This is definitely going to take some time to get into place. The blockchain environment in general and that entire industry is evolving at rapid pace and not nearly as defined or as widely used as one would think it should be, which then brings me to my second challenge, which I think is adoption. Not just by users, right? So being able to trust that, hey, I'm going to set this up. I'm going to create a DID. I'm going to build myself into this platform. But also adoption from tech platforms, right? Because I could go in and build my infrastructure and maintain my decentralized identifiers and all of my personal information. But if I have no platforms that are willing to accept that or build secure private interactions with that, then it's really useless, right? Then all I'm really doing is creating yet another silo of my information and putting in the legwork to do so, most likely, and then getting no value or no gain from that. So I think we're a ways away before we actually see this become a reality. But I think in theory, it's a really interesting concept, and it's one that we've talked about several times as we've talked about privacy and security issues and GDPR, so on and so forth, where much of these issues are rooted in the fact that consumers have no control and their information is getting passed all over the place and being used in audience segmentation and targeting and lists that they might not have even interacted with. It's just that their data has been passed and sold as a result of sort of gray areas and loopholes and different terms and conditions that we've agreed to as we've signed in and provided information to various platforms. I'd also expect to see others creating their own versions as well, which will then introduce complexity to the consumer, right? If you have someone like an IBM or Oracle or Apple, trying to take this same approach, then as consumers, if we have to start using different methods to create and manage DIDs, depending on which services that we're trying to interact with or use, then that just becomes extremely burdensome, right? Microsoft is claiming that this is an open source approach. And I'm sure from Microsoft's perspective, they're hoping that by rooting this in open source, that many will just accept it. But I think from a competitor view to Microsoft, and even from an entrepreneurial view for individuals who might be thinking about building concepts around this, particularly in the customer data platform industry, it's going to potentially get more confusing before it gets simpler. And I think it's going to be a bit of an arms race, if you will, to see who builds this the fastest and generates the appropriate user adoption. You could also start to think through people like Google and Facebook, who obviously don't want to lose your personal information despite the challenges that they've had in the industry in the last 18 to 24 months. They could, in theory, start to try to do something like this as well and maybe evolve their global login approach to something a bit more secure and rooted in this concept of decentralized identifiers. But I think we'd all agree, though, that this is a step in the right direction, and that it's moving us towards building better data security, better control, and better privacy. And I think anytime you see a vendor taking a step in that direction, from the standpoint and perspective of users like us, is a really cool thing to see. So I'm looking forward to keeping an eye on this. And as there are further developments, I'll probably bring that forward here in future episodes of Analytics Need as well. But with that, we'll go ahead and put a bow on this week's episode. And again, I thank you so much for listening. Hope that you found this informative, and we'll be back next Monday with another episode. Until then, feel free to continue the conversation with me directly on Twitter at Bill Bruno using the hashtag AnalyticsNeat, or via BillBruno.com, LinkedIn, or really any other channel that you prefer. Thank you so much, and have a great rest of your week.